Welcome. This is Kathleen Pearl. This is a commentary, really, on the Parasha reading Shoftim, which is just commenced. And we will be speaking and looking at the aspects of judicial government from God's laws and His ordinances and statutes that He set up to have a nation under God. And this is very pertinent at this time, very timely for what is going on in the United States of America with the overthrow of the rule of law and order by the current administrations. I will give a brief overview of the Parsha readings and then with commentaries as they apply. This is not a detailed study. This is a grand overview. I strongly suggest that you read the scriptures yourself and study them out. In the process, it does a work in your thinking and in your spirit of cleansing and defining and clarifying what the issues are. You think it through and then you know, critical thinking skills, what you are, what your definition is. It's not vague and fuzzy. The Parasha readings for Shoftim. Shoftim means judges, are Deuteronomy 16, 18 through 21, verse 9. Then the Haftarah readings, and there's a variety of them given. Oh, I try to include them all because they all have some aspect. The Messianic adaptation, it's Yeshayahu, Isaiah 51:12 through 52:12. But may I suggest that you go all the way and read Isaiah 53. All right. The Brit Hadashah suggested readings are John 1, 19 through 27 for the Parsha. Matthew 5, 38 to 42, Matthew 18, 15 through 20, Acts 3, 13 through 26, and Acts 7, 35 through 53, 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 13, 1 Timothy 5, 17, 22, and Hebrews 10, 28, 31, which reflect back to the Torah readings. And Yeshua as the fulfillment of that. This is about God's government. And God is the same. He does not change. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And Shoftim means judges. All right. Moses cries out to Israel, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof, which is justice, justice you shall pursue. In Deuteronomy 16, 20. And this translates as justice, justice you shall pursue. Tzedek or justice can also be translated as righteousness. The proper order of behavior, both public and private, that reflects the righteousness of God Himself. The Torah charges the judges of ancient Israel with establishing and maintaining righteousness among God's people so that God would be honored. So the word, Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdof. Every word in the Torah has weight and significance. Now, this is just a paraphrase from Rabbi Russell Resnick's Gateways to the Torah, the Messianic Rabbi. This is about righteousness, that judges are to bring the righteousness of God's laws into the land, which means that God's laws must be upheld. I'll give you an overview of this parsha. It starts with, you are to appoint judges and officers for all your gates in the city. Adonai, your God, is giving you tribe by tribe, and they are to judge the people with righteous judgment. You are not to distort judgment, justice, or show favoritism, and you are not to accept a bribe, for a gift blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of even the upright. Justice, only justice, Zedek Zedek Tirdof, you must pursue, so that you will live and inherit the land Adonai your God is giving you. And then the author Moses goes on to continue to scribe that you're not to have sacred poles by God's altar. These are or standing stones, which is worshiping trees and stones. It's idolatry. And you are not to sacrifice to your God anything that is defective. Then he goes on to say that if there's a matter, he goes into the legal, how to judge legal matters at the gates in the city by the elders. Okay, this is an order that is given here. And it says, if a man or a woman is wicked and breaks covenant, God's covenant, that would be the Ten Commandments, by going and serving other gods and things that are forbidden, then you're to search the matter out. And there's to be a death sentence. Only if there's a testimony for two or three witnesses. And the witnesses are to be the first to stone that person to death. Now, if you're judging this matter at the gates, the city gates, which is the elders, all right, so this is the order of government that's being laid out here. According to Moses, when he set up judges over each of the tribes, usually the elders, to rule on the smaller matters. And then if it was a difficult matter, it came to Moses. Concerning bloodshed, civil suit, personal injury, or any other controversial issue, you get up and go to the place which Adonai your God would choose and appear before the Kohanim. So if the elders can't judge it, then the Kohanim, who are Levi, and the judges in office at the time, and you will seek their opinion and he will render a verdict for you. This is the Sanhedrin. And you'll do what he says. You're to take care to carry out the judgment. Now, there is a Sanhedrin that is convening now that has called Obama to come to trial before them, and also the Pope. Obama before Rosh Hashanah in September 2015, and the Pope before Yom Kippur in 2015 to be judged according to their actions and according to the Torah, the laws of God, okay? The laws of God, not the laws of man. Now, let me say that in ancient times, many kings would rise up and they would make their own set of laws. And they would rule out of those set of laws. They were not the laws of God. They did not come under the rule and order of God, but their own determination. And many of these thought that they were God, and they became God because they made the laws and they ruled over the people out of their own self thought and life. All right. This means that the laws of the Torah bring the God's commandments, the Ten Commandments, brings you under the jurisdiction of God's rule of order that has been set for those who have covenant. All right, you're not to act presumptuously. This is verse 12. And not to pay attention to the Kohen, the priests who are judging the matter. So the priests become the judges, the arbitrators above the elders of the city for more difficult cases. And in this way, that person must die. You will eliminate wickedness from Israel, and all the people will hear about it and be afraid to continue to act presumptuously. And then he goes on to talk about, and this is very important in Deuteronomy 17, the prerequisites for a king. All right, it was not God's purpose to have a king over Israel. Originally, when God brought the Hebrews out of Egypt, he was their king. He was their Lord. And Moses was their spokesperson and gave God's rulings and judgments in the Torah because the people were afraid of God, and rightfully so. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And through Moses was set up the order of government for elders and judges in the camp of the Hebrews. But God knew that when Samuel came, and later before, God knew that they would want kings like the other nations. And in 1 Samuel 8, verse 7, it talks about there were judges over Israel that God set up. And then in 1 Samuel 8, 7, the elders came to Samuel and said, "Now make us a king to judge over us like all the nations." This thing displeased Samuel when they said it, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected God, me, that I should reign over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they do also to you. Now look, therefore, hearken unto their voice, howbeit you protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of king that shall reign over them." And Samuel told the words to the people that asked of a king, and he said, "This will be the manner of king that shall reign over you." Now, I put this in here to say that this was not God's original intention, but he knew the people will be carnal, and we want a king like the other nations, and it was rejecting God's rule. And let me say that at first landing in Virginia, when the pilgrims came over and set up Jamestown, they declared that we should have no king but Jesus. Now, we won't have the Anglican Church or the Episcopal Church, and these people were fleeing the tyranny of Rome. But the Anglican Church is no better. Believe me. Look at the history. So this is man's fallen predisposition to want to have others to rule over them. They don't have to take responsibility for their own lives and self-government. This is a discipline that a moral and ethical culture is required to do. Hence, the law came through Judah, through the Jews, and it is not null and void. It is the foundation of God's government and his rule. So now he rules through, right, his laws and orders through magistrates and judges, rulers that are godly. And here's what it's required of a king. According to Deuteronomy 17, when you've entered the land and you've taken possession of it and are living there, you may say, "Oh, I want to have a king over me like all the other nations around." In that event, you must appoint as a king the one whom Adonai your God will choose. Okay, so it has to be God's choice, first of all. He must be one of your kinsmen. All right, he has to be born. This king you appoint over you, you're forbidden to appoint a foreigner over you who is not your kinsman. And this is a requirement in the United States, which has not been upheld. You have to know, and God has to know, that person that's being appointed as a king over you. The present occupier has no parents, has no evidence, and in fact, to the contrary, is of his father, who is a liar from the beginning. However, he is not to acquire many horses for himself or have the people return to Egypt to tame more horses. No one going back to Egypt. No having, you know, Lamborghinis and Mercedes. As much as God told you never to go back that way again. Likewise, he's not to acquire many wives for himself. All right, and then everyone fell down on this. Solomon was the worst perpetrator of breaking God's rule of order here, requirements for a king, so that his heart will not turn away. What? Turn away to their idols and their gods, as Solomon did. And he's not to acquire excessive quantities of silver and gold. Thereby he will have the palace and the gated community and enslave all these people, which is exactly what happens, as it says in 1 Samuel 8. Let's go back and 10. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto people that asked him of the king, and he said, "This will be the manner of king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself for his chariots and to be his horsemen." Don't acquire more horses. and some shall run before his chariots, and he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of charity. This is bondage. It's when you go back down to Egypt, you go back into the house of bondage when you do it the Egyptian way. He will take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. In other words, he'll just go and take what he wants. And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants, your goodliest young men and your asses, and put them to work. He will take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refuse to obey the voice of Samuel. They say, nay, but we will have a king over us, that we may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go about before us and fight our battles. And Samuel heard the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice, make them a king. All right, but nevertheless, God still chose this king. All right, the point is that Solomon broke all these rules of government for a king in Deuteronomy 7. And the upshot is that when his son took the throne, he levied even more taxes and burdens on the people. Taxes are slavery. You know, we're supposed to be taxation without representation. And it divided the southern and the northern kingdom. It brought civil war. And only Benjamin and Judah stayed in Jerusalem. And the ten tribes set up worship up in the north. They didn't go down to Jerusalem anymore. They were the northern kingdom. And eventually were dispersed. They were the lost tribes. Now let's look at the most important aspect of Deuteronomy 17 concerning the king in verse 18. Through 20, and when he has come to occupy the throne of his kingdom, he is to write a copy of this Torah for himself in a scroll. The king himself has to write it down. Those of us who are in education knows that this is a device of making a neural synapse pathways in your brain more than just hearing the word or seeing it written down. When you write it, it goes into a deeper areas, kinetic learning, tactile learning, visual, auditory, tactile. All right,